The Senate Revenue Committee on February 6, 1985, in hearing room A of the State Capitol Building at 1 p.m. Tapes 27 and 28.
Senate Revenue Committee will come to order. We're going to have a work session today on Senate Bill 178 and then 180 and 181. We'll take them in numerical order. And we have several amendments that are being suggested and so on. And so, Steve, why don't you start? Tell us where we are, and then we'll bring people up if necessary to explain amendments.
Okay, the amendments are right behind the bill. For Senate Bill 178, there are three pages. The first page is separate from the other two pages, so you have two different sets of amendments. Okay, now the first amendment,
Okay, we got dash one and we got dash four.
Right.
And that's it?
Yes.
Okay.
I guess we can deal with dash one first. This one takes and deals with the question of certified mail, whether the department has to use certified mail for notification after a conference. And that language is on pages 6 and 7 in the bill.
Where are we? So 178 in amendments dash one, which are in your book right following 178. And the first issue up is whether or not they have to give notice by certified mail
on the results of a conference. And now you have that language both in section 9 on page 7,
page.
Line 9.
Section 9, page 7, line 9. Okay.
Right now it's deleted.
Section
you have that same language on page 8, line 28.
Okay, so the issue is whether or not we restore the requirement that notification of the results of a conference be made by certified mail.
Yes, the amendments in effect, since that is the only change to those two sections, those two ORS numbers, the amendments effectively delete those two sections and renumber the remaining sections.
Mr. Chairman, I move the amendments.
Okay. Can the amendment as to what put it back in?
Oh wait, mm-hmm. If I'm not premature now, does the dash one?
The dash one would restore certified
that's
mail.
All
why don't we? No,
it.
Mm-hmm.
Does it do
that's
more than
all
that?
Dash one does.
Mm-hmm. That's all dash one does.
Okay.
You asked for a separate
okay.
amendment
that's
on certified
I did.
Mail.
Okay, Senator Hanlon moves.
Good heavens.
Senate amendments dash one dated 2/5/85, which would. Those members wishing to restore the requirement that the notification be by certified mail would vote aye, and those wishing to go along with the Department of Revenue's request that they not be required to make notification by certified mail would oppose the amendment. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Cease.
Thank you. And this is only addressing what happens to the notification after the conference.
That's right. Only after the conference.
Okay.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chair, as Senator Howe pointed out, it seems to me that this is a good requirement to have in there at this time. It certainly enables the revenue office to show that it has made that effort to contact a person, and also it puts the person that is in receipt of that on notice that they're being monitored, that they know that they're just accountable at that time, and it seems to me that would be helpful. And as we also discussed, it's not a significant impact as far as cost goes. It wasn't $6,000.
$600.
$600? $600. So, seems to me to be wise.
Other discussion? Okay, call the roll on the amendment.
Senator Bradbury?
Aye.
Cease?
Aye.
Howe?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Riles?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Monroe?
No. Motion carried. Okay, now we have the dash four amendment?
Yes. Which will start back at the beginning of the bill. Okay, the first question was at the bottom of page one and the top of page two in terms of the department having authority to adopt by rule tables that would be used to determine the present value of a limited estate. They testified that they wanted to adopt federal tables that have been that are in use that have a higher interest rate and no sex bias. That's required of the feds now, and there was concern about department rule not being tight enough. The amendments proposed in the dash four add language that in implementing this section, the department shall give due consideration to the tables adopted by federal regulation for state tax purposes under the Internal Revenue Code, which would be inserted both for the gift tax tables and the inheritance tax tables in sections one and two.
Senator Riles?
I would like to ask staff a question. When you say give due consideration, that doesn't require you to use those then?
No, it does not. Barbara Seymour of counsel said that it would cause a constitutional problem if she was more specific in saying they had to adopt the federal tables.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, why would that be a constitutional problem?
There's a provision that, I didn't look up the section, that says something about the state depending upon, or trying to remember the term she used.
Illegal delegation.
Delegation of authority, that was it.
Illegal delegation of authority.
In the state being connected to federal law except for income tax purposes in defining taxable income.
So what we're really saying with this amendment is, yes, they're going to use the federal tables, but
you can't force them to.
But you can't force them to. There's for clarity. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Cease.
I suppose if you wanted to be real specific, you could say that they couldn't use any tables that had, whatever the wording would be, were based on unconstitutional provisions for whatever, if you wanted to really be specific. But
no, that's all right.
Okay.
Further discussion of this amendment? Okay, what's next?
Okay. On page 2, line 23, in section 3, this was the language that allowed spouses to split gifts up to the time that they file their state return. Language was requested which would grant an extension for filing a state return if there was an extension for filing a federal gift tax return. And so the dash four amendments, line 11 through line 18, language do that.
Okay. It would be an automatic extension when they request a federal extension, and they get an automatic extension as well. Mm-hmm.
Unless they have already filed their state return.
Okay.
But for the due date is passed.
Senator Hanlon.
I wonder what the effect is of this unless the state gift tax return has already been filed and normal due date passed. Does that mean that we cannot give them an extension similar to the federal extension?
If they have already filed their state tax return, okay, and then they have not filed their federal or asked for an extension on their federal after that date, then there would not be an automatic state extension.
It just wouldn't be automatic.
All right, I understand.
Because once you have filed your return, then it's filing an amended return in effect to change it.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Reynolds.
As the problem was written to me during the interim was the fact that people requested their federal extension, and because their state income tax hooks on to their federal income tax, they thought then that took care of the problem of filing the extension for their state income tax. Then it comes back and says, no, that's great, you're going to change your federal return, and that's fine, you've got more time to do it, but now you can't do it on your state tax return. And it, now, is this really addressing that problem?
Well,
I think so. And I think the department agrees with that.
If the taxpayer knows that he or she has to contact the department and request an extension, it doesn't sound to me like it's not automatic, I don't think.
There still has to be notification.
Senator Houck?
Well, I think I'm on the wrong. Are we talking about the gift tax here and not the income tax?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You're talking about, okay, then it isn't really income tax return we're talking about. I assume you meant gift tax.
Return, right.
Okay, and the extension.
It's for issue.
Okay.
This would basically be in effect for 2 years.
Okay.
And after that, the gift tax is phased out, right?
Yes.
So we're only dealing with a short period of time here.
I would imagine,
Senator Hanlon,
such returns would probably be handled by somebody who's a professional and knows right. How to read the statute.
Okay. Next.
The next amendment on dash 4 deals with page 9. The department requested an amendment to not amend section 13, going back to the top of page 10. They added the bankruptcy provision to this ORS and decided that it probably should not be a part of ORS 314.412. So the amendment restores 314.412. Okay. And on page 10, basically section 13 on page 9 is deleted.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it would be require no change.
Okay.
All right. Then the language at the top of page 10 about the bankruptcy provision is made a new section 13A.
Why do you need the
A?
You don't need the A, do you? If we've deleted the current section 13.
Section 13, the new section 13 says that 13A is added to and made a part of ORS chapter 305. So there is a new section 13. And then the new language is 13.
All right. Okay. Yeah. When this is printed and engrossed, they'd be renumbered then, right?
Yes. So but I understand that the Senate is not necessarily engrossing all the bills this session.
Yes. We haven't. Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cease.
I was told that we were.
I had heard that we weren't, so I can't say that it will be engrossed right now.
Well, that's okay. We need to find out.
We're sending things out of committee.
Yeah, we need to know that for sure. Would you find out for sure?
Yes.
Because then, when we think a bill needs to be engrossed, we need to request it, then we'll do that. In previous sessions, it's been automatic, but we can do that each time if necessary. Okay. Senator Cease?
Well, so they would save some money on bills that are, a simple change of a numerical budget amount or something like the ones on the floor today. You wouldn't have to reprint the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that amendment then is just changing how those language is inserted in the bill, which statute is attached to.
Okay. Okay. Page 16.
Page 16. There was language suggested by the department to change line 11 to basically take out the ORS chapters, chapter references, and add more general language. In the process, it was decided that in line 7, that language should also be changed because of the specific chapter references. So the amendments change line 7 to take out the chapter references and insert the 293.250 or the revenue and tax laws of the state. And then in line 11, that same language that the department presented to you is inserted there.
Okay. Senator Bradbury.
What is ORS 293.250?
It deals with the Department of Revenue Collection Unit. It's the offset.
The other agency.
Berlina, why don't you come on up? Identify yourself and then answer Senator Bradbury's question.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I'm Berlina Crosley from the Department of Revenue. Senator Bradbury, that section is the other agency accounts. That's where we have the authority to collect accounts for, like, the state hospital, mental health accounts, student loans, etc. You can assign any account owed the state to the Department of Revenue. And part of that's an offset process, and part of it's a direct collection effort.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bradbury.
So this would, what this statutory change does is enable you to get information from the Employment Division in your carrying out your collection duties.
Right.
For other agencies as well as your own collection duties. It'd be both your collection duties and the collections that you do for other state agencies.
That's correct. We would basically use that for setting up payment arrangements. For example, if Department of Employment showed that a person was making in wages, you know, $15,000-$20,000, that sort of lets us know how much in payments they could make on their student loans, et cetera.
Right. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Okay, and just one more.
On the page 2 of dash 4, after line 25, add a new section 29. This was but not presented to you last time. It's language that Barbara Seymour of Council put together with the idea that there should be a beginning date for the changes to the inheritance and gift tax statutes, and it's inserted here as January 1, 1986. And the department agreed with that change, so that there would be a beginning date when the new tables adopted by rule would be implemented.
Questions about that? Okay, is there a motion on the dash 4?
One more.
Sorry.
Section, you had several questions on section 27 in terms of what information the department could disclose to the Oregon State Police. There is an attorney from the AG's office here this morning to answer your questions about that section. Let's see if you want to change it.
Okay, would you come forward and identify yourself, and we'll see if there are questions.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Canary. I apologize for my voice. I have a bit of a cold. I'm with the Department of Justice Legal Counsel for the Department of Revenue.
Okay, Senator Bradbury.
We had some questions in the committee as to what, in Section 27, it says you can provide, the Department of Revenue can provide information to the Oregon State Police for the prosecution of violations of the criminal laws relating to perjury, theft, forgery, or tax laws. What is included in prosecution? Would that be evidence to go before a grand jury, or would it be evidence only in a case when someone's been tried? What constitutes prosecution?
To answer specifically your question, prosecution, in my mind, has no legal definition. The only definition I could provide to Senator is that it would probably be the actual prosecution after there's been an indictment returned by the grand jury, that is, the actual trying of the case preparation for and trying out a case before a court. In my opinion, investigation is a word that would mean those events that took place prior to an indictment being returned by the grand jury.
But there really is no, I mean, that's your interpretation of the law.
And I know of no legal definition.
There's really no legal definition of those, of that word.
That's correct, Senator. If I may, might make a statement about the section you're referring to. There's an Attorney General's opinion that I helped prepare regarding the extent to which the Department of Revenue may make a disclosure to agencies, including the District Attorney's Office, for prosecution. I was not involved with the drafting of subsection 1 of section 27. It's my opinion that this section is a bit overbroad because it would allow disclosure for any crime that's being investigated or prosecuted. The Attorney General's opinion that was written limited the disclosure only to crimes that were being prosecuted as a result are based upon the validity or invalidity of the tax return. The distinction, I think, is crucial in view of the fact, in view of what the law is currently.
Senator Riles had a similar concern and has gotten a legal opinion, and that's where she is right now, is getting that information. So.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
can you just explain to me a little bit? Right, the way it is right now, it's information relating to the prosecution of violations of criminal law relating to perjury, theft, forgery, or of the tax laws of the state. Now, if you limited it to the validity of the tax return, what kind of cases are those? I'm not familiar. What kind of cases would that be?
Basically, the kind of cases you're referring to, Senator, are HARP frauds and tax evasion, where there's been an underreporting of income. Now, it's necessary, at least the opinion that was, and I have copies of the opinion for the committee, the opinion addressed itself to the fact that it was necessary, or at least it was, I think, the opinion assumed it was necessary to make disclosure for purposes of not only tax laws, but interpret tax laws to mean other kinds of laws that dealt with the validity or invalidity of the tax return, for instance, perjury, forgery, or theft, which are general criminal statutes, but that the opinion went on to limit, saying it was only, disclosure could only be limited in those cases where the perjury, forgery, or theft would dealt with the validity or invalidity of the return itself.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
I had a question when we first heard this bill about what was so special about those three crimes that they would be subject to this level of disclosure. Are they related generally to invalid tax returns?
Those are the three general criminal statutes that we felt that one could prosecute tax evasion or underreporting under, as opposed to, you know, burglary, murder, or something else.
Yeah.
But that's why the language in there was put in. And we do have some proposed, well, at least they're not proposed at this time, but we have made some, have drafted some proposed amendments to change this, to limit it and tighten it up a little bit.
Mr. Chair, I'd be very interested in seeing his amendments.
Do you have them available?
I do.
Okay.
I have both the proposed amendments and the engrossed section. Should I approach the chair?
Yes. Could you give them to Betty, and she'll make sure we get.
Do you wish also a copy of the Attorney General's opinion that I referred to, talked about what could be disclosed in the current law?
We'd like to have that for the record. Has the department had a chance to look at this amendment?
Briefly, sorry to say, Your Honor, because I'm used to being in court. Briefly, Mr. Chair. just they've gone over it and have approved, or at least given us, or told me that that was what they had in mind.
Okay. Verlina, you want to come up and just put that on the record?
Again, I'm Verlina Crosley from the Department of Revenue. After I testified at the earlier session, I went back and talked to Elizabeth Stockdale, and then she knew that Mr. Canary had written or helped write the formal opinion that we received. Generally speaking, the legislative concept that we put in was to do what you're now reading as amendments, but he was not the drafter, as he's just said. He did think, as I did and as you did, that it is much broader, could be interpreted as much broader, and this is more, I've had this reviewed by the program manager that basically works with the current statutes, and he likes this wording much better than even the bill language.
Okay. Questions of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hamlin.
This amendment, is this the result of the questions raised by the committee? Is that what prompted the amendments to be drawn?
Yes, sir. Although, excuse me if I may, as Ms. Crosley stated, this was the intent initially, the legislative concept that was initially intended by the Department of Revenue, rather than the broad language that did appear in the drafted bill, or the bill as drafted.
Is it your opinion then that these amendments are more narrow than the language in the bill?
Much more narrow, sir.
Now, in the light of modern life with all its problems, is it considered desirable to restrict our ability to use the information that the department has to prosecute criminals of any type?
Well, sir, you're asking my opinion. I think that's a policy choice that you have to make as a representative of the people. There's some concern always with disclosure that it's abused, and that other agencies may wish to obtain information from the Department of Revenue that only the Department of Revenue has, pursuant to its receiving its income tax returns from citizens, to using that information for other purposes. Now, we have, I think, a policy of self-reporting our income tax, and that one of the measures that we have to assure accuracy in that reporting is that we have strict confidentiality. So any expansion of that confidentiality has to be looked upon critically. Now, I was a former prosecutor for 5 years in a district attorney's office, and I certainly share your concern, Senator, with regard to restricting the enforcement of our laws. However, that's got to be tempered with the invasion of privacy that one may feel if any information from a tax return can be made public or be used by other agencies. This bill, or at least the way it's been amended, or we propose to amend it, I think restricts it to the purposes of enforcing or of assuring accurate reporting, and that is that if you don't report accurately, you'll be prosecuted for the inaccuracies. Not that if you report accurately that you'll be prosecuted for something else that's unrelated to the validity of the return. Does that answer your question, Senator?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I think I'm of the view that we're dealing with tax laws here, and that if we want to expand this, the idea probably ought to be discussed by the Judiciary Committee, not by us. Thank you very much.
And this latest amendment limits it, does not expand it.
Right.
Okay, Steve, I think that's a question.
In the bill in line 21 and 22, it talks about the person given access to the confidential information and refers to the ORS statute. Is there just what's the reasoning behind not having that kind of language in the proposed amendment?
In the Attorney General's opinion that I helped prepare that you have before you, it deals with that question specifically as to whether or not you can require the grand jury, the judge who's hearing the case, an Oregon State police officer, all to sign confidentiality statements or waivers. It was our feeling that that might be a bit cumbersome to require each member of the grand jury, each person who's sitting in the audience of a court case to sign each of those, and it got to be simply too cumbersome and beyond the intent of the legislature, at least my opinion, beyond the intent of the legislature in requiring the secrecy or the confidentiality requirement.
Especially if we decide to limit it, as you've suggested.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Other questions, well, Senator Bradbury?
I guess I'm looking at the amendments that you've provided us. I don't see that subsection 2 of section 27 is deleted. Is that what you were speaking about, Steve?
Yes, just any reference to that language.